Who is facilitating the 6 o'clock?
That would be me. Hello. Hi, family. Hello. How's it going? I'm an alcoholic and addict. My problem is Marsha, and welcome to the LGBTQAI plus panel. My mother likes to call us the alphabet family, the alphabet group. And, you know, she'll on a regular basis say, okay, so what letter have you guys all added today? And I'm like, well, no new letters today, Mom. So I'm proud to be part of this group. And so today we are going to be listening to some panelists that are going to talk about just some stuff, right? What it's like for them, how they identify, how they don't identify, any challenges and things like that that might go on. But mostly we're just going to have some fun. So just to give you a little background, yes, all about the fun. Woo-hoo! Just to give you a little background on myself, as I said, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict. I've been around the programs for over 20 years. And I'm coming up on 5 years because it took a while for me to realize it was the first drink and the first drug that gets me in trouble, not the 15th one, or, you know, starting drinking in Toronto, waking up in Los Angeles and thinking that, you know, it's something happened. I got hijacked. You know, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I'm not a huge person when it comes to labels. I work in mental health and addiction, and I have a lot of clients that will come to me, and everything that goes wrong, they say, well, my diagnosis isn't, it's like, no, you're not your diagnosis. And I'm not my diagnosis. I really don't even want to sometimes say this, that I am my label, but, you know, I am who I am. I'm Marsha, and I'm enough. I'm enough. I really am. It's one of those things that I really stand by. But I'm proud to be part of the LGBT group, the family. I came out when I was 18, something like that. Lord, it wasn't a slow come out. I literally burst the closet doors open because, you know, I realized what was going on. You know, I've had a few challenges, but not as many challenges as I've had, you know, some recently being a person of color in sobriety, or being a woman, or, you know, those were the three strikes that my mother said that I had against me when I was growing up. You know, you're going to have a hard time because you're a woman, because you're a person of color, and you're gay. Guess what, Mom? I'm doing just fine. So that's me in a nutshell. I'm really looking forward to hearing what our panelists have to say today. So I'm going to start this off. I'm going to turn this over to Brianna, who is going to introduce our first panelist. I don't even see Brianna. Where did she go? Brianna, are you here?
Brianna went into the breakout room for the safety session. I will go in there and...
Oh, that's okay. So then we're just going to shake things up a bit because, hey, guess what? We ought never be organized. So we're just going to shake things up a bit. So how about we start with Adam? Adam lives here in Toronto, same place I do. Woo, woo, give it up for the T-Dot. There we go. Woo, woo. And so, yeah, Adam, we're going to start with you. And it is all yours. And thank you all so much for being here. Thank you.
Hello, folks. I changed shirts, so I now have my Don We Now Are Gay apparel, which I love this shirt. I just picked it up for the holiday season. I find it absolutely hilarious. Yeah, my name's Adam. I have been in recovery for about the last 3 years. I guess when it comes to my relation to the LGBT community in AA, I kind of started from a very interesting place because being in Toronto, we obviously have a very, very diverse set of meetings. And predominantly when I first kind of came into the rooms, I was very much in the secular rooms and the LGBT rooms. Like those were the ones that I just felt the most in place at, right? So it was always very interesting for me because like I started with two very different methodologies staring at me because the LGBT rooms in Toronto are predominantly very traditional and don't have nearly as much wiggle room in terms of how people work their program and things must be a certain way. So I definitely had an interesting experience. And for the first like year and a half, I had a traditional sponsor and I was working through the steps with her. We got to step six and looked at each other and went, yeah, this isn't going to work anymore, is it? Because the way that we had worked like our steps and when step like 6 through 9 is a lot of prayer stuff in the traditional program. She knew that I was not a prayer person. She knew that that was not my approach to working my steps, but I respected the fuck out of her. And I was really impressed with what she had done with her life and how she had managed her sobriety. And I really wanted to, it's like what they say when you walk in the rooms, find someone who you want what they have. Right. And I just respected the fuck out of her. And I was like, you're the type of person I would want to work through steps with. And after having a talk with her and stuff and kind of voicing my concerns and voicing that, like, I'm not a prayer person. This is not likely going to be the best way for me, but like, I would like to learn from you and I would like to work through this stuff with you. So I did the traditional thing for quite a while, called my sponsor every day. We met like probably once a week or once every 2 weeks at most. And we were reading out loud the chunks of the big book and going through bit by bit. Like it was very traditional. but yeah, so I just kind of got to this point after we went through my fourth and fifth, and I got really stuck on my inventory for a while. That was until I ran into the Jeffrey Munn book, which just explained it in a way fucking better way than the big book does. So I wound up like kind of restructuring how I was trying to approach my step work using that kind of thing. And then obviously when we kind of hit 5 into 6, 5 went fine. I mean, you're just sharing it with another person and having that conversation. But like 6, me and her just looked at each other and we're like, I don't think this is going to keep working the same way we've been doing so far. But like, I still gained so much knowledge from her, and I really respect the fuck out of both traditional and secular AA, and both have really given me a lot in different ways. But after that, I really kind of started falling more and more into the secular community, just because my ideologies and my way of thinking and my approach to my recovery was so much better fitted in the secular community, that I very much started kind of falling more predominantly over on the secular side and Beyond Belief. And then We Agnostics became my home groups. And now I got the Secular Young People's Meeting, which myself and my friend Alex started in the pandemic, which is basically kind of neat. It's like a North American wide for the most part Young People's Meeting. We have people from like California who come. We got people from, well, Jeff was in Newfoundland for a long while. so we've got mostly North America because it's a 9:30 p.m. EST meeting. So it's like pretty late for the European group. But for the West Coast of the US and West Coast of Canada, it actually works out really well. But yeah, so now I got that group, which has been really, really cool. And entertainingly enough, we found a lot of the regulars and a lot of the people who wound up like floating around our meeting have been generally very queer, and it's great. But yeah, so it's definitely been an interesting ride for me. And I can definitely say that my sexuality and stuff definitely has played a role in where I've wound up in AA in a lot of different ways. Some aspects are my aversion to religion and issues that I have with that, because I grew up Roman Catholic, where being gay was not okay. And to deal with that and then trying to shoehorn spirituality back into my recovery when I wasn't in an okay enough place to do that, it definitely kind of had me lean away from the traditional aspects of AA and the spiritual aspects of AA, which very much landed me in secular recovery and really allowed me this space to kind of learn and develop my own way of approaching this, my recovery and what I was going to do, based on more of a psychological aspect and learning how to understand my brain and the things that I have gone through and the traumas I've gone through and how those affect me on the day-to-day and how that affects my recovery and how that affects my addictive tendencies. And for me, it's like, I say I've been in recovery for like 3.5 years because drinking is not really on my mind anymore. It's not something that I think about as something I'm going to do, but I've got problems with binge eating. I've got problems with addictive gaming. I have problems with a lot of other addictive patterns that are very unhealthy to me and definitely cause me harm. And especially when you're dealing with the stress of the pandemic and that on top of any work stress or financial stress or anything that you might be dealing with in any relation to that, these last couple of years have been an absolute nightmare for a lot of people. And my mental health has tanked. About 6 months ago, I actually had a mental breakdown and wound up going to the hospital. It was rough. Since then, I have gotten a formal diagnosis of my mental health, which was a first. And it's really helped us to kind of start digging away at kind of what I need to do to get into a healthier place. But that's been a roller coaster too. And I had been struggling the last couple months. And as of last week, I wound up on a leave of absence from work for a month, which isn't great, but work's being very, very helpful. So like, that's nice. And they're trying their best to support me as best as they can. But it's very much been like one thing after the other the last like 6 months. And I've started noticing some of these other patterns kind of crop up, you know? It definitely makes me think about the fact that like my recovery is not one thing. It's not alcoholism. It's not one singular entity. There are a lot of facets to my recovery that I really need to take care of, because taking care of my sobriety can throw other things out the window if I'm not careful, if I'm not actually paying attention to them. So I've been learning a lot about that, and I've kind of branched out into different recovery groups. And I know there was a panel and a lot of people talking about like other outside issues this afternoon, talking about CODA and OA and stuff like that, that are very much like awesome support networks as well. But what I briefly wanted to touch on, because I thought about this afternoon, and it was kind of it's an entertaining theory that I kind of came across, and it kind of came from this feeling, and it's part of why I kind of stepped away from the LGBT rooms. This feeling of being out of place, even though I'm already in a marginalized community, and not feeling like I belonged in the LGBT rooms. And it really, for a long time, I tried to shoehorn myself into the LGBT rooms because I felt like I was supposed to be there. And over time, it just felt more and more out of place. And I didn't understand where it was coming from for a very long time. But I started looking at things, and I mean, I've identified as gay my entire life. Like, I came out just after grade 8, mostly because I got outed, and then like was kind of like, well, I'm like halfway out the closet already, might as well continue. So it was a weird coming out story, but that's another thing. But yeah, basically, like I've identified as gay for years, but at the same time, it's more and more come to my attention that gay doesn't quite fit properly either, because I've dated non-binary folks and I am attracted to trans men as well, which is like a big faux pas in the gay community. It's like, oh my God, they have a vagina. And I'm like, fuck's sake. Anyway, I digress. But it's been like over the last while, I've kind of realized that like gay doesn't quite fit either. And I've like kind of been leaning towards queer for a long while, because it's like, it just fits a little bit better. But one thing that I've found really interesting is I started looking at the difference between gay culture and queer culture. And I found that they overlapped traditional and secular AA very interestingly. So from what I've kind of seen, and this is kind of why I felt kind of out of place within the LGBT rooms, is the LGBT rooms kind of have, here's your box of like how you should be. And if you fit in it, great. If you don't, you feel kind of out of place. That's the way the gay community has been in a lot of places a long time. Where the queer community on the other side is like, welcome to the community, figure out what your box looks like and kind of go from there. Figure out what it means to be queer for you, what it means to be part of this community, and we'll work from there. It's been interesting to see that kind of dichotomy. But when I started looking at things, I realized that the people who often flourish in traditional AA, from what I've seen, have been a lot of people who fit into the gay community. And more as I've kind of branched out into secular AA, I have found more and more queer folks and queer identified people than I have ever seen in traditional AA. And I find it really, really fascinating. And it's just one of those interesting pieces that I kind of wanted to bring up and talk about, because I think it's a fascinating overlap. And I think it's not something everybody necessarily sees. But when I started looking at kind of the gay communities within AA and looking at like the LGBT folks I know within secular AA, it very much shows kind of that difference between gay culture and queer culture. And I just like, I wanted to kind of bring it up as a little thing to nibble on and process and think. But yeah, I really wanted to come out and share on this, and really honored to be on the LGBT panel this year. This is really cool. So thank you, folks.
Thanks very much, Adam. That was awesome. It makes for conversation for the breakout room that you'll all be joining us at, right? Okay, so now I'm going to ask Brianna if she can unmute herself, and Brianna is going to introduce our next speaker, and I'm looking forward to this. So are you there, Brianna?
Hi, everybody. My name is Brianna. I'm an alcoholic. My good friend Charlize is a member of TJAA, and she's been a member of this group for a long time. She's been a member of this group before they were even on Skype, and when they were just a Gmail or an email group. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Charlize.
Hi, my name is Charlize, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been blessed to be sober since 2007. A quick history, I came in as a sneaky man with a beard and disgusting and full of fear and hate and anger. I tried my best to pray away my defects, which didn't function for me at all. So eventually, 3 years later, I went to a women's meeting as a clean, well-shaven, attempt to be as pretty a woman and as healthy a woman as I possibly could be. The topic of that meeting was honesty, which was really awkward because I had to be honest. And I was. And then I went back finally to my home group, came out there. And shortly after that, I went to a place called Trans Pulse. It's now called Transgender Pulse. In those days, it was called Laura's Playground. And they had an AA meeting, which was at one of those things where you type and then you wait for somebody else to type a response, and then you type and then you wait for somebody else to type a response. And it was a very slow, arduous, unpleasant process in which it was very difficult to help anyone. And you just, you know, you couldn't live your primary purpose particularly well by helping other alcoholics in that situation, but you tried. And at one point, I found out about a meeting that met online and used, when it could, Skype. And this was about almost 10 years ago. And at that point, we had security, and it's still the way we handle security. Security was handled by having a separate room, a listserv. You join a listserv. You're typing back and forth. There you get the passwords and the entry words to come to the meeting. You can't just walk into the meeting from anywhere. You come in from one place and one place only, and that's the listserv. That's functioned for us as a safety valve for a long time now. And it also gives a place to discuss things, to post a topic for a topic meeting. And it's always there, and it gets to be a nuisance because you get a lot of mail. But in some ways, it's great. That's noise in the back of my wife, my good wife, spinning salad for supper. So sorry about that if that becomes a nuisance. We have been going at it for a while. And when we started out, it was like there'd be three people in the meetings, maybe, if you were lucky. Skype was particularly horrible. You'd get everything breaking down. You know, every so often nobody had enough bandwidth. Sometimes you would get good pictures. Sometimes you get no pictures. We'd shut everything off just so we could talk to each other. And it resembled meetings that have been going on since AA started, where people started with just a book. Letters went back and forth originally. You know, so this was kind of a big step forward. And occasionally you got to be with to see and to be with other trans people. And when I went to gay meetings did not have, there was no LGBTQ community. there was a gay community, gay lesbian community, and you went in the gay lesbian community, and if you stayed there for years, you might see another trans person come through. If you talked about surgeries or anything like that, the guys would cross their legs or walk out the room. It was impossible to be there and be yourself and discuss the issues, which were really important and might take you out to a drink. So being in a trans community was really very important. And at that time, AA had nothing. They put out a book called Sober and Out, which I have behind me. And I was like, oh, God, there's this one. First thing I remember is reading the pamphlet, all gay. Oh, my goodness. There's nothing about gay, a trans person in here. Nothing that fits me. I read Sober and Out, thinking, oh, my God, I bought the book right away. One little story about a trans person. All the rest was all about gay people. And nothing about trans people. So at one point, somebody came to our meeting from the GA. We were the first group that was ever listed in on OAAA, which is the online intergroup of General Service Office, and that had an audiovisual meeting. That's when we had our Skype meeting. There was a gay meeting called the Rainbow Group at that point. As GSR, we finally changed our way around, and we got ourselves into a Zoom meeting, which was a big jump for us because we had to figure out how to pay for it, how to maintain it, and how to have a treasury, how to get money in, how to handle it like a real AA group. And it took some time to have group meetings and all the rest of it and develop a process. We'd started with one meeting. At this point, we have 4 meetings a week. We have people from all over the world coming. And for many, it's the only chance they have to be who they are. And there's no pressure on anyone to be anything. You know, it's like, is it a queer community? Yeah, to some extent. It's trans with an asterisk. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but for a period of time, people would write trans asterisk after the trans when you typed it. And that asterisk meant anywhere on the gender spectrum, up, down, backwards, forwards, whatever it might be on the gender spectrum, that little asterisk handled that situation. So you weren't saying, you have to have surgery to be in my club. You know, it was not anything like that. It was like you're accepted. And that's been wonderful about this group. Everyone is accepted. Everyone is welcome there. We get people that cross-dress occasionally. And that's okay, too. A lot of people, that's the only chance they have. When you come in from central Arkansas in the hills of nowhere land, in a community where people point at the shotguns on their back door because they remember you when you were a woman, and they aren't going to put up with you with a beard. That's awkward at best. So you kind of like go away and don't go to meetings. And it's a blessing when these people find us because we're there, and we've been there for a long time, and we plan to continue. Like everyone else, when the pandemic came in, it made a big difference. We had lots of extra people join. People were looking on the internet. Now I'm amazed. I go to the listings of OIAA, and it's like, oh my God, look at all these people. Look at all these meetings I could go to. But I've been really happy at this meeting. I have a great community there. There's a wonderful group of people. There's a tremendous amount of sobriety, 40, 50 years in cases, lots of time, and lots of new people coming in, getting sober during the pandemic, which is amazing. People who come in as presenting as male or as female and changing their presentation totally over time, undergoing surgeries, changing themselves, finding themselves and finding some peace, and comprehending the word serenity as they deal with not only alcohol, but their gender issues, which were very difficult for them to deal with. We were really blessed when the General Service Office came to our meeting and said, do you folks have any feelings? We know nothing about transgender people. Will you come and talk to us? Because we're thinking about doing a pamphlet. And we were really blessed to be involved in the construction of that pamphlet. And I was really happy to be able to speak to that group, which scared me to death. Here I am, 600-700 people from the GSO, big folks, and I stood up in front of them all and said, yeah, we need this pamphlet. I'm a Charlize, and I'm a transgendered alcoholic, or an alcoholic who happens to be transgender. That was a big thing for me. It was like coming out in the grandest scale I can possibly imagine with lots of my peers, and everybody would brace me, and it felt good. And I found that through AA, although there have been places where I've been elsewhere, in difficult situations in rural areas, highly conservative areas, and it's difficult at times to be green. You know, it's like Kermit the Frog says, it's not easy being green. But fortunately, because of the program, I feel great, and I'm able to help other people, you know, and other alcoholics. And my first sponsor would never use my proper name, always misgendered me for about a year after I transitioned and was full time. When I went and spoke in front of the General Service Office's the NARASA, the Northeast group, he finally started to call me by my right name. And he looked at me and said, well, maybe there was a reason why I got you sober. And I was like, he was a wonderful sponsor. He taught me a lot about patience, kindness, tolerance, and love. But I try not to be that kind of a sponsor for the folks that I deal with. It's just a different world. You know, we don't have to have that toughness that used to be, that Catholic heavy duty. Now, I don't know. I'm a pantheist, if anything. So I don't know if I belong in secular AA. I don't really, you know. I believe I work outside, and I'm happy in my spirit as a crazy transgender farmer. So my life is good, and I want to thank everybody here for letting me speak. And it's just an amazing thing having the ability to reach out to the world and to other people when you happen to be a little, normal. Yeah, I'm normal. I'm a normal alcoholic. I'm not having a drink tonight if I'm lucky. And you guys are helping me. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Charlize. I'm so looking forward to hearing from you. That was absolutely amazing. So in case anybody here is wondering what all our alphabet letters stand for, because I go through this with my mother on a regular basis, we've got lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, with the asterisk, yes, with the asterisk, queer. And the queer kind of sort of covers a lot of the non-binary, gender fluid, things like that that are going on right there. And then we have intersex and asexual. I forgot two-spirited, though. Yes, we have to remember the two-spirited community as well. And the plus is all the supporters that are out there and all of that stuff. So I decided that, when I was looking for people for this panel, it was a very last minute decision. So somebody who's new in my life, one of my sponsees, I have asked them to come and share. And so if you can give it up for Janie, it is your turn, sunshine. Yay! Did you unmute? There you go.
Thank you, Marcia. Let me just start a timer so I don't go over time. So I'm Janie. I'm an alcoholic. You can use any pronouns to refer to me as long as it's respectful. Yeah, as Marcia said, I am like really, really new to the program. So I was very pleasantly surprised when Marcia asked if I wanted to share at this because like I just started the program. I really am very new to this and I'm only really in one group, and I have never been to any in-person meetings. My first meeting I went to in February, so it's been less than a year. And yeah, I was kind of in and out. And then in June, I relapsed for the last time. And I finally stopped not just alcohol, but weed. And that was a big deal for me. So yeah, I'm in 3 days, I'll be at 6 months, which is really exciting. And I just turned 21 a few days ago. So that's another interesting thing. I'm originally from the US, but right now I live in New Brunswick, Canada. So that's another thing that's been interesting. Like my mom is very involved in AA. She has been for decades, and you know, recently she's not so involved. She's been sober for about 8 years now, which is like just amazing, and I'm so proud of her. But yeah, she was very involved in traditional AA, and she is very religious. So my perception of AA was always very, tied to, you know, the concept of God, because whenever my mom would talk about AA, she would talk about how it's just such a God thing, is what she loves to say, such a blessing. And like, just people who don't believe in God can be like changed by it, and that's like whatever. So I didn't even know that there was secular AA that existed. And in February, I kind of stumbled into several meetings, and then just stuck around in the one that I found the fit me the most. And that's not technically a secular AA meeting, but it's it has a lot of people in it who are agnostic and atheist, and it's very open. And there's a lot of just open-endedness to it. But it is specifically an LGBTQ and friends meeting. And it's, yeah, I love it. It's based in Iowa, so it's like way far away from where I am. I grew up in Maine. And so, yeah. Anyway, I'm really early on in the steps, and I haven't really been working them in the past couple months because I am a student in my third year at university, and it has been just crazy busy. And so I kind of got, I made it past step three, and then I kind of just stopped at step four because I wanted to just, I don't want to rush through it. Yeah, but I'm really enjoying the Jeffrey Munn book. It's just really cool. I had no idea that AA could be secular, that this was an option. And especially during the pandemic, like I live in a very rural area in right now and where I grew up. I've never lived in like a city, of any kind. So it's been really important to me to be able to just access meetings over Zoom. There are no in-person meetings where I am because of the pandemic, and because I think even normally it's just a very rural area. And my experience is very limited, and I can't really speak to much about like different experiences of what I've had in different types of groups, since I've popped in and out of some different groups, but there's really just one that I go to. But yeah, I can just speak about my personal experience as like a young person in AA. I think, yeah, growing up, like my perception of AA was just, it was like, my mom took me to some of the meetings because I didn't go to school. So a bit of backstory. Just a few minutes. I'm just going to explain like I had an interesting childhood in good ways and bad ways. My mom until I was 13, since like the 80s, she got very heavily into fundamentalist evangelical Christianity. And so she, and my dad, although he was already a part of it. So they decided to homeschool all of the kids. So I'm the youngest of five children, and there's a big spread between us, like in age. My oldest sister was born in 1980. I was born in 2000. So anyway, my mom, and yeah, so I was the youngest of like a large family. And my mom homeschooled us. But then when high school came, some of my siblings decided to go to public school, and some of my siblings decided to stay homeschooled. It varied a lot. I got out as soon as I could. I wanted to go to public school. It was difficult for me me and my siblings had very different experiences, even just from each other, growing up in the same household, homeschooled, because my mom was constantly in and out of recovery. She would be sober for a couple of years, and then she would drink for a couple of years. And when she was drinking, there was no structure. So I was not, I wasn't going to just teach myself stuff. I just kind of did what I wanted. And when my mom was drinking, she just would be in her room constantly just hiding away and drinking. There were large gaps of my life where I didn't really have like any supports outside of my family. That was, you know, when my mom was sober, she's an amazing person and she's an amazing mother. She just was very sick with her addiction. Yeah. So I had a bit of an interesting transition when I turned 14 and decided to start going to public school. I had never like really been exposed to people with different religious beliefs or no religious beliefs or any gay people. I was taught, you know, in the fundamentalist church that I grew up in. And I stopped going, you know, my family stopped going when I was 13. So in high school, I was kind of just like, oh, that was only before I was 13. So I can just block it out and it won't affect me. Like I can just, you know, be myself, be queer, be gay. And it's just, it'll be fine. Like I can just, you know, it's fine. And then recently I kind of realized that the first 13 years of your life, like they're pretty formative. And so, yeah, like I'm realizing that it's not going to be so simple where I can just kind of wipe out those parts of my childhood that were pretty traumatic in terms of, you know, being taught that to be gay is a sin and it's like comparable to bestiality and incest. Like that's what I was taught by the church and by my parents. So yeah, I got to high school. I went to public school and it was just the craziest culture shock ever because it was strange because, you know, I had lived in central Maine my entire life, but I didn't know most of the people in my town that were my age because I had never been to school. I was in a very niche religious community in Maine. So when I went to public school, I was meeting people who were my neighbors, but I had never really interacted with them. Yeah. And I felt very behind. And there was a lot of shame. I didn't tell my teachers or anyone that I met that I had like never really learned math other than like, you know, for counting money or like doing things that I needed to do. That was very, I felt so behind. I felt just like I was not smart. I'm very insecure about like my intelligence abilities, I guess, or I was, I'm not so much anymore, which is great. But, basically, yeah. So high school came and it was total culture shock. I was just surrounded by people who had completely different socialization histories than me. I was very much just, as a child, like just kind of hung out with a couple people from church, but like, it was just, you know, once or twice a week. And yes, I know, Marcia, I'm timing myself. Don't worry. So yeah, high school was a bit of a wild ride and I kind of told myself and, you know, my mom got sober. So, that was really good. But we still had like a very turbulent relationship when I was in high school because we were just at each other's throats all the time. And she's a very intense person to live with. I love her to death, but I kind of like, I was experiencing all these mental health problems and like a lot of panic attacks and depression. But I kind of had this mindset that when I graduated high school, I could just move somewhere to a different place and everything would be totally fine. I saw my problems as like a direct result of just the people that were around me and my upbringing. And so, yeah, that happened. I survived high school miraculously, had a horrible time as like, I feel like most people do in high school. And so I decided to move to Canada and go to this awesome school that just looked perfect. And I love it here. But I moved here and I had total freedom. I was able to make my own decisions and not have my my parents breathing down my back. So, I mean, you know, I was dating girls in high school and like sneaking them around because I wasn't allowed to like, so yeah, I was not out to my parents. And so I was just wanting like a fresh start. And then a few months into starting school at this new place and like deciding to like start fresh, I realized that it wasn't going to be as simple as just changing my environment. I realized that like I was still depressed and having panic attacks, even though I had like moved and tried to make all of the circumstances in my life as perfect as possible. It was a big turning point because I realized there was something wrong with what's inside of me. It's not just the like my surroundings that are fucking me up. And so that was really hard. I felt a lot of shame. I think the reason that I'm in this room right now is because of how much shame I've kind of just sunk into throughout my life, with my sexuality and with feeling like I was behind in terms of learning math by, you know, being homeschooled. And yeah, just a lot of different things. And then, you know, mental illness growing up, like in the fundamentalist evangelical church, they do not really take it seriously. They just tell you that you're not praying enough and it's between you and God to work out. So I think like when I realized I had some mental health issues that I needed to really address and not just run away from, I felt very ashamed and embarrassed. Yeah, that was really hard. And I think that's what led me to substances. It's been like the past few years. I mean, yeah, like this all happened. I moved to Canada and this like started at this new school in 2019. So it's been, you know, 2.5 years and it's just been a complete roller coaster. Like I don't recognize myself, but it's like in a good way. Like I feel like I've changed so much that like it's really scary, but it's good. And I don't know if this like made any sense. I feel like I don't really have a lot to contribute in terms of like different experiences that I've had in the rooms because I've only really been in that one room. But I'm just hoping people enjoyed hearing what I had to say. If you could relate to anything, like feel free to message me or reach out. Yeah, I guess that's it. So yeah, thank you, Marcia, for asking me to share, even though I'm like barely 6 months sober. And yeah, so thanks, Marcia.
Thank you so much, Janie. You know, sometimes we learn more from our newcomers than we do from our long timers. So thank you so much. That said a lot to me. Just around the religious trauma that you've been through and everything like that. It's just, I just find it, you're fascinating and I'm honored for you to be part of my journey. So Janie and myself and our next speaker go to an LGBT meeting. I think the message was left up top if you wanted to come and check us out. Yes, we do some traditional stuff, but we are welcoming to everyone. You know, if you bite your toenails and your life is unmanageable, come and see us. So it's one of them. Doesn't matter what it is, just come on down. So that brings us to our last speaker. This person I saw when I first went into the other meeting in Iowa, and I fell in love. And you'll find out why. So please give it up for Lyra.
Thank you so much, Marcia. You're going to make me cry before I share. My name is Lyra, and I am an alcoholic, an addict, and a codependent. My pronouns are she and her. In another month, I will be celebrating 4 years of continuous sobriety from alcohol, drugs, and dangerous sex. What I want to talk about tonight is really understanding the origin of how did I get here, right? Because I think that's a question that I definitely asked myself in early sobriety. I don't know about y'all. I still ask myself sometimes, how did I get here? What sequence of events took me from A to B? And before I dive right in, I want to share a quote with you that sort of it's the motif of what I'm going to talk about. And that's loneliness is not being alone. It is feeling that no one else cares. Okay, let that sink in for a moment. So, loneliness. Yeah, I was a pretty lonely child. I was a pretty lonely adult too. And I began asking myself one day on a bender, how did I come to this? How did I find myself bent over the sofa with a bottle in my hand, trying to sip out of it while I'm only thinking about the guy's pills behind me? How did it happen? What led me to this? And really, the core of it was feeling like no one else cared. I felt terminally unique. A lot of that had to do with spiritual trauma. I grew up Roman Catholic. I attended a Catholic grade school. At age 6, I realized my gender identity and tried to share it with people. It was not well received. At age 8, my eldest sister was murdered in our front yard. At age 10, my parents divorced, right? This is all sob story, right? You've heard it before. But what I'm trying to establish here is that this set the spiritual basis for my malady, right? I felt like if there is a purpose to life, or there is some mystical spirit somewhere, it doesn't care, or it's malicious. Even worse, it wants me to suffer, right? It wouldn't do this stuff to me otherwise. And so I locked a lot of my identity and myself up and said, well, if it's not okay to share, then I'm just not going to share it. I'm just going to try and be someone else. And that's when the drugs and alcohol found their place. When I share that I'm an alcoholic, an addict, a codependent, sometimes I get the, woof, lady, you got baggage. Which one came first? The truth is that none of them were the gateway. The loneliness was the gateway. It was the gateway that said, you're not enough. You're not gay enough. You're not straight enough. You're not woman enough. You're not man enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not dumb enough. You're not smart enough. You're not ugly enough. You're not any of these things. You're just somewhere in the middle by yourself, holding up that bell curve. And a very good friend of mine at my home group, this group that we're all beating our drums to, and I hope you'll come and check us out. A very good friend of mine, he says, I suffer from the addiction of more. And when he told me that, I resonated with that. I said, yes, because more is the opposite of not enough. So because I felt like not enough, I wanted to fill my body and my life with the most more that I possibly could. If it was a drug, I did it. If it was in a bottle, I drank it. If it was a man, especially with two legs, I chased him, right? You couldn't run fast enough to get away from me. When I finally put this together, I realized that if this is the crux of my addiction, if this is what's causing me to be so friggin' crazy, how do I solve it? How do I not be so friggin' alone in this world? And then someone said, there's a group of people that are just like you. And I said, you're lying? That's bullshit. No one's just like me. I'm a special little snowflake. And I'm terminally unique. I don't know if you heard that earlier, but it means that I am a sinking ship of one, and you can't do anything to pump these bilges. And they said, no, I think you really need to check out an AA meeting. And I said, no, I've tried that, done there, been there, done that. And So I did. And I hit the ground running just because I had no other options. I felt like if I don't do this, then I'm going to let everybody down. There's my codependency coming out. And I got a sponsor and I worked this 12 steps, but he knew something wasn't quite right. He knew that there was still this "to thine own self be true," not being respected. And he said, "I think you are not getting enough." And I said, "Don't use my word against me. You can't do that. I decide what's not enough, and I decide when I need more." And he said, "I think you need to go to a queer meeting. And there are a ton of wonderful 12-step meetings here in Des Moines, Iowa. We have several LGBTQ plus friendly meetings. And I checked out all of them. And I loved all of them. And the very first thing that someone said when I walked in through the door was, 'Welcome home.' And that stuck with me like glue. To this day, when I meet someone for the first time in my home group, I say, 'Welcome home.' Because I mean it. You are home when you are here. Finding the right meeting is everything. Finding the right tribe is everything. The home group that I belong to is a tight-knit community. All of us have known what it is to be not enough and to feel like we're alone, lonely. But together, right, there's something more. And that can be your higher power. That can be whatever you need it to be, which is beautiful. Marsha already kind of hinted on it. That group is very open and welcoming. We made it a point when we started that group. We said, I don't care if you are an alcoholic, an addict, a codependent. I want you here. I don't care if you overeat or if you are an enabler of an alcoholic or an addict, or if you, the whole spectrum of 12-step programs, even if you're just curious, even if you're just interested, that's the only prerequisite. You just have to show up. And knowing that there was this inclusive place where we say welcome home and we mean it, that is what brings me back from the memory of sitting on that couch and thinking, where did it all go wrong? How did it come to this? It came to that because I was meant to come to this moment right here. There are no coincidences. I want to share one last quote with you. This one is from Charles Dickens. I'm sorry, I don't know who said the other quote because it's been said and said and said and polluted. But this one's from Charles Dickens. And he said, "No one is useless in this world who lightens the burdens of another." And I truly believe that. If you feel like you are useless, that you are vestigial, that you don't belong, come to a 12-step meeting and just show up, because you might be the reason that someone comes or stays or shows up. And with that, I am out of time, so I will pass with that. Thank you so much, Marsha.
Thank you so much, Lyra. You're amazing. See, do you see why I fell in love? You know, it's just amazing. I have been given the reward of so many different things in my sobriety. And now over the past year, I've been given the reward of people like Janie and Lyra in my life, and Tosnua, the meetings that are there, the secular group, there's Beyond Belief. I get to meet people like Arlene and who is just absolutely amazing. And Annie, who I stalked when I first came into the rooms because, you know, it's just incredible. Otis, my brother, I love you. Ever grateful, Jed. You know, I could sit here and ramble off every single one of you because you're all so important to me and important to my recovery. So thank you, whether you identify LGBT or whatever letter of the alphabet you are, whether you are a supporter, I just wanted to say thank you. And thank you to the amazing crew that we had working behind the scenes today. If you're interested in a breakout room conversations, if you have some questions and anything like that, please put that little green check mark up beside your name, and the boys will get you situated just fine. So love you all very much. Thank you so much. Charlize, Lyra, Janie, and Adam, you rock. Love you all. And I hope everybody has a great night. And thank you for coming.
Yay.
I don't know who's rocking the boat next, but follow up on that. Thanks very much.